Hello, good evening, everyone. Welcome, John Henry Soto here, along with George Batista. Welcome to Counterparts. We're very excited. Today, we have, this is someone who's going to blow your mind because she is so dynamic. Her name is Patricia, I'm going to say this right, Alcevar, right? Now, that's how it's Spanish, but I've heard it also pronounced anyway, we're going to ask her exactly. But she also goes by Patty Boom Boom. I don't know if she's still using that name, but I love it because she is kick ass and she is boom boom. She's amazing. So we're very excited today. George, thanks for being here because, I had to get you paroled, but I'm glad you're here and everything is excited. So let's make this happen. All right. Thank you, everyone, for being here. We are really excited. I mispronounce a lot of names in this. I even mispronounce George's name sometimes.
Yes.
And it does happen. But again, we're very excited. Mm-hmm. Bring a Patty in a second here. First, George, I want to turn it over to you because we want to give some love to our sponsor. And take it away, Jorge.
Thank you, sir. Hope the cops don't come take me out of here before I finish. Again, hate when that happens. All right. So as always, the Counterpart Show is brought to you by Wellness Resources, a family-owned and operated nutritional supplement company providing the highest quality clinically formulated supplements since 1985. Find out why Wellness Resources supplements are the top choice of health-conscious individuals around the world. Their supplements are amazing, let me tell you. Make sure you go to myvitaminresource.com to check out all the supplements that they have. And by the way, if you enter the promo code Counterparts, you will get free shipping on your order. And on top of that, for the month of March, they have a promotion where you will get 25% off of their daily supplements, which I use daily. So absolutely. So again, check them out at myvitaminresource.com. All right, so let's talk about our amazing guest today. So there's so many things I can say. I'm just going to read a snippet of what she's done because it's just incredible. But today we're talking to Patty Alcevar here, and she's a women's boxing champion, ambassador of sports and health for the United States Embassy, marathon runner, climber, and alpinist. As a boxer, she won 2 New York City Golden Gloves titles and was named the U.S. Olympic Committee's Boxer of the Year in 1997. Aside from her time in the boxing ring, she has tested her endurance, running both the New York City and Boston Marathon many times. Patty's dream is to be the first Latina from Queens, New York, to climb the 7 summits of the world, which are the highest peaks in each continent. She has already reached the highest summits in South Africa, Europe, North America, and Africa, along with inspiring others to achieve their goals. She also continues to work on her own goals, which includes completion of her upcoming memoir, Courage, the Book. And we are absolutely honored to have her on this program. So, ladies and gentlemen, Patricia Alcevar.
Woo! All right. Patricia, thank you so much for being here.
No, thank you for having me. And, on the note of my last name, I'll share a quick, funny story. I was getting ready for the Nationals. I was warming up. And, when the Nationals, one of the biggest, most prestigious competitions in boxing in the United States. And my coach at the time was super focused, and he's usually a clown. But when I was getting ready, warming up, he's like, all focused, and we're there, I'm punching the mitts and everything. And the announcer comes and he's like, I have an urgent question. And then my coach is like, okay, what is it? He's like, is it Alcivar or Alcivar?
Super important.
He's like, who the F cares? But I was like, it's Al. Well, I was like, it is Alcivar. But if you're saying it in Spanish, it's Alcivar.
So he had,
I give him credit that he came and he asked at least.
That's actually really good of him. Yeah, he actually took the time. And yeah, that's actually important. You know, it's we've learned a lot, especially in those events. I think John Travolta a couple of years ago butchered like somebody's name when he,
Idina Menzel. Yeah, right.
And it was just like brutal, brutal. But yes, very, very cool. So thank you so much for being here. Like George said, you know, in the bio, reading the bio was that there's way too much. We've mentioned this, mentioned that, but you know, it's just like an amazing dynamic life that you're living right now.
No, and I appreciate it, and it's very humbling, even you know, to. When I do some podcasts or these interviews to hear that, and sometimes it doesn't seem to me like true that I did all those things, but right. You know, I think that one of the things that keeps me going is that, you know, you should, at least for me, you should always strive to, right. You know, keep doing better. And you're only, my thought has always been, you're only as good as your last performance. So, but those are good reminders of what the human spirit is possible, capable of doing.
100%.
Absolutely. 100%. Yeah. So I'm curious too, because I know you also did martial arts when you were young as well, right? And how did that mindset come about? What did it start early on, or did you develop that later on?
So you know, I think it's every is different for every person, every athlete. I come from a tough upbringing. Mm-hmm. My parents were very strict, especially my father. My father, you know, spoke to me with his belt. Right. Yeah, like definitely on the abusive side. So mm-hmm. It definitely was something that scarred me to a certain extent. And I was always drawn to sports, but not just any sports. Like to me, the more challenging, the more I was attracted to it. And and I was diagnosed with a mild case of ADD when I was around 6 years old. I was always too much energy in school, and my parents at the time had very little resources. So the school counselor advised my mom to at least try an extracurricular activity. And so my parents worked as maintenance workers, and they had a free ballet program at their jobs. And they were like, okay, let's try that. And that kind of sort of worked, but you know, I did as well as I could, and that program was over. My father was removed from my home when I was 10 years old, and you know, I needed like something, and I remember passing by a martial arts school, and one of the things that I fondly remember doing on Saturday afternoons was watching Bruce Lee movies.
Right.
And I was like, you know, I just remember just watching those movies and just like being in awe of the kicks, and I was like, I want to do that. And my mom was like, well, I can pay for some of it, but you're going to have to, you know, see how you can contribute to it. So my first job was delivering the daily newspaper to the residents of Queens.
Wow.
And in order to do that, I had to wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning, to get the paper and then start my route before school. So that's how like I wake up super early still. And but it came from that. Like, yes. So it started as young as like when I was like 10, 11 years old. Wow. So but you know, at the time I was just like, I was upset that my mom was just like, well, you're going to have, if you want to do that, you're going to have to contribute to it. But it taught me like the, really the worth of every, you know, the importance of every dollar, of earning a dollar. Exactly. And my favorite days were Sundays, because the little old ladies, the grandmas would give me like, you know, $1, $2, $3 tips on Sundays. But I, you know, I learned to pay a contribute for my martial arts, and practicing martial arts, I started off with Taekwondo. And even my personality like changed because of the intensity of the sport. And I loved it and I wanted more. So I switched from Taekwondo to Shotokan, and then from Shotokan to Kyokushin, which is full contact. And I took it as far as I could. I won the world championship in 1995 in Manhattan Center, in the women's lightweight division. And it was, again, it was a wonderful experience. And I, you know, my discipline and, you know, focus, it all originated from there, I believe. So because of my personality, I feel like, you know, once I won the world title there, I was like, okay, now what? It was just something I think in my DNA that is just wanting more. It's like, okay, I came to do what I had to do. Now let's move forward. But martial arts was definitely, you know, a wonderful sport, and it's some amazing discipline, focus, you know, just everything you can name comes from that sport.
And it's actually incredible. I have a 12-year-old daughter, and George has how old is she?
16. 16.
So we know the importance of teaching the kids discipline and work and when they, you know, and that whole thing. So from an early age, you had that. Where was the transition from the martial arts and into the boxing? Was that?
So, you know, I did martial arts for a while. And then I left my home when I was like 15 years old. It was just too much. And one of the things that I craved was like peace, and I didn't have that at home. So I left home when I was 15. I rented a room from an 80-year-old woman in Jackson Heights. So I was working after school at a sneaker store, making like $80 a week, and I was paying like $60 a week in this room. So I barely had enough money for food, transportation. So I remember being in that room and being like, you know what? It's a tiny room. I'm eating cornflakes for dinner, but I'm in peace. So one of my first jobs in the working world was at a place, and you know, not to jump around, but everything in this lifetime happens for a good reason. My first job was at a place called Sanctuary for Families, which is a domestic violence shelter. And that place taught me about the vicious cycle of domestic violence and everything. And you know, knowledge is the first step of breaking that cycle in your family. So I was working there, and this place called the New School offered the staff free classes. So I was like, okay, you know, I was like looking through the catalog, and of course, what jumps out at me, the Art of Boxing.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. Like the Art of Boxing. And wow. when I was a kid, the only thing that my father allowed us to watch on TV on Saturday night on Telemundo was boxeo.
I remember those days.
Yeah. And I remember, like, you know, like the Bruce Lee movies, like being like hypnotized, like I watched it and I liked it. Yeah. So when I saw that, I was like, okay, I've been wanting to do something other than martial arts. I'm going to take this class. So I sign up and I go to my first class, and my heart just like broke when, you know, we're there, and it was more like a box aerobics class.
So
the instructor, yes, exactly. So the instructor afterwards is like high-fiving everybody, and they're like, okay, see you next week. And he's about to high-five me, and like, you know, I leave him hanging. And he's like, hey kid. And I was only like 16 at the time. And he was like, hey kid, what's up? Why you leave me hanging?
Yeah, what's your problem?
And I was like, I thought this was a real boxing class. Like, I thought we were going to fight. And then I was like, I am a martial artist, and I wanted to better my punches. I want to fight. So he was like, let me see what you have. Throw any punch and I'll block it. So this guy, my coach, is 6'5", 6'6", 250 pounds. Ginormous guy. And I'm punching and I'm only 5'4". And he's blocking everything hard. But from martial arts, I knew that no matter how big you are, the one place you cannot build muscle is your solar plex. Right. So I found an opening and I hit him with everything I had right in his solar plex. So this 6'5" guy, like, he doubled over. And he's like, you know what? Women's boxing became legal in New York City in 1995. And he's like,
wow,
he's like, the New York City Golden Gloves is like a big deal in New York City, and women are allowed to fight there. So he's like, if you want, I'll train you and we'll enter and see how you do. So I was like, that's what I want to do. And that's where it all started. And once I, you know, he trained me, and I happened to be good. And you know, once I won the New York City Golden Gloves twice and the Nationals, I was the first person, male or female, that he trained. And when I won the USA Nationals, that inspired him to open up his own gym. So it was definitely a journey, not only for me, but the people that surrounded me. So it was, it was definitely, you know, life changing. Boxing, I think, is seen as a violent sport because the ultimate goal is to knock your opponent out, you know.
It's
either knock them out or get knocked out. It is a brutal sport that way. But you know, I remember when I first really started like sparring, and I hit my sparring partner, and her nose is bleeding, and it startled me. I was like, and I stopped kind of punching, and my coach, he like pulled me aside and he was like, listen, when you see blood, you go after it like a tiger.
And you're like, huh?
I did it not because I hated my opponent or I had hate. Right. I did it because I wanted to challenge myself, and right. and there was a way of me building my own self-confidence. Growing up in an abusive childhood, my confidence, my self-esteem was shot, was non-existent. Right. So, and no one thought that I could possibly do something or accomplish something like that. So to me, it was me battling my own demons right. and, right. and building what was never there. Yeah. So, but I never felt hate for my opponent right. or anybody for that
right,
matter.
Right.
So to me, it was a hard concept for me to like see blood and then like finish them off, you right. know? So it was definitely a skill or a switch. Yeah. And I learned to do that, you know, once that bell rang, it's like, okay, I can't have compassion and I have to, you know, the person in front of me represented my dreams, my goals. Mm-hmm. It took a lot. And yeah. till this day, I use all the lessons learned from, you know, from the ring, and I try and apply them, you know, as an alpinist currently now, you know, it's kind of sort of the same thing in a sense that you're at a high altitude, you're so tired and fatigued and hungry, and, you know, you're battling high altitude headaches and fatigue and hunger. So yeah. that represents, you know, in a way, you know, this opponent in the ring.
Yeah, yeah.
And, yeah. you know, the secret to moving forward is to be able to take all that discomfort and keep moving forward.
Right, right.
You know, many people ask me, like, you know, how do you do it? And part of it, you know, part of it, there's a lot of things that go into it, but I'm, you know, you have to be comfortable being uncomfortable.
Right.
So, I think in a way, I think it's amazing how all these sports have many things in common.
Yeah.
And if, you know, if you learn how to put, you know, pain and discomfort aside and use your you know, your quote unquote your why and your, you know, your strength, you could keep moving forward.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, I love that. And it takes us back actually how we're here today with Patty. Years ago, and I'm sure you remember the fight, but this is how I actually saw her. I was watching Broadway boxing.
Oh yeah.
And this was years and years ago. I mean, maybe even 10 years ago at this point. But I was watching this fight and she was crushing. She was doing so well, and it was like a done deal. I knew she was going to win, and they gave it to the other.
Yes, and you know,
I was like I was so pissed off, George. I was so pissed off that I literally went online to find Patty and to tell her. I think it was, I don't know, Facebook or Twitter, wherever it was, but to make it a point that you were robbed so badly in this fight. And she kind of was like, say, yeah, you know, it was one of those fights where, you know, you knew she was up on points.
Right.
You knew she was up. The point thing was not even a question. Like, I knew she was up in points, you know? So I was like so crushed, but that was actually what propelled me to actually reach out and be like, you're such a great fighter. That was so your fight. I was like, oh, I couldn't believe that.
And, you know, and life is unfair, you know, mm-hmm. a lot of things like that happen. It was unfair. It was my first, I was undefeated up until that point.
Wow. And yeah, those judges, I was like,
no, but it wasn't.
I'm Googling their names. Where are they?
So it wasn't even about that. And I learned I was so naive in that sense that, you know, I wasn't represented. I represented myself. I was self-managed.
Right.
And the other girl, Keisha, I remember, she was represented by Lou DiBella. Exactly. If you're a Lou DiBella fighter, mm-hmm. yep. you're no matter what, you're not losing. Even wow. if you
didn't even think about that.
If you're represented by Lou DiBella, even if you lost, you're not losing. And again, I was undefeated. Wow. And I, like you said, I clearly, I had so many people come to that fight, and like, it was a shock.
It was a shock. The audience.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No, you know, dude, who was there? Right before that fight, I was interviewed by the Yankee Network. It was mm-hmm. on the Yes Network.
Yes Network, right.
And they were like, what just happened? You know, yeah. And they were like, call the cops, because you were.
Yeah. Dude, it was like the audience gasped. They were like, oh. Like, they took the fighter immediately out. Like, wow. Right, she was immediately wrapped up and they just left because yeah. it was like yeah. clear and that she was
and
robbed.
The thing is that, you know, those are very difficult things to just like pick yourself up. And I knew that I gave it everything. And I even knocked her down.
Yeah.
Like before the end of the last round. So those are the things that, you know, it just happened. It's part of life. And to get myself back up and say, okay, I just gotta keep, you know, moving yeah. forward. And a few fights after that, I won that belt.
I
picked myself up, and you know, and I was that's a New York State title. So it definitely when you win one of those titles, it's yours forever. Nobody's right. going to take it away from you. Right. And I remember right. that, you know, a while back before that, I was seeing a sports psychologist, which is like, you know, all elite athletes have a sports psychologist. Mm-hmm. And I remember his name, Bob Swope. I remember that during one of our sessions, he was like, so tell me, what is bothering you? You know, why aren't you able to focus the way you want to? And I'm like, well, I don't want to lose, you know. And then he's like, what is it that you don't want to lose? I'm like, well, you know, I'm defending my title. And I'm like, and he's like, okay, I'm going to stop you right there. You won a title, or you won many titles, and you're a champion, and no one will ever take that away from you. So you're right. not defending anything.
Right.
You are and will always be a champion. No one will take that away from you. And that awesome. And that right there changed my outlook, my mentality, everything. And like the minute I realized what he was saying was true, it's like, okay, you know, till the day I die, I will always be, you know, that champion. Yeah. So, yeah. So that was definitely.
That's great.
That was, yeah.
Yeah. Great words. Those yes. were definitely great words. I wanted to ask you, George, I'm sorry, I'm jumping in here. I know you had a question too.
That's okay.
Because we talked earlier before we went live, we talked a little bit about mental strength and, you know, when you go through something like that, overcoming that, those challenges, you know, and then going and winning winning those championships, you know, and you mentioned the psychologist, you know, helping you with that. What was, you know, what else in you, like, you know, that kind of ignites, that just keeps you going? You know, we talk a lot about keep moving forward, right? Like that famous Rocky speech, right, from the movie, you know?
Right.
And it's such a powerful, it's so true, you know what I mean? It's like, you got to take all the hits, but you got to keep moving forward, right? What was it about it, you know, what goes through your mind when you think about, like, for a second, or does it ever even enter your mind that you have a doubt if you can do something? Does that even come enter your mind?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, so many things come into play here. You know, you have to be humble enough to realize or to seek help if you need it, mm-hmm. or, you know, or know where it is that you have to improve. And I knew that, you know, as an athlete, you know, there's definitely things that I can work on. And, you know, although for me, one thing that has never lacked in my life was a desire. I've always had the desire, the passion. It's always like I, as far as I can remember, I've always been a dreamer. You know, since I was a kid, my mom used to be like, you know, this kid is always like, you know, wanting to do these crazy things. And I, part of it is just my personality, my ADD, but it's just, you know, it's just, I have always been a dreamer. I've always wanted to accomplish what, you know, defy the odds, what people, you know, didn't think I was capable of doing. So the desire, the passion has always been there, but sometimes you know, definitely self-doubts, like, you know, I want to do this, but could I? And then I think the other part of it is faith, you know, mm-hmm. just faith is like, okay, I want to do this, I know I can, but, you know, statistically, sometimes with the boxing, you know, I, you know, losing when I wasn't supposed to lose, when I really did win and I lost anyway, you know, I think that's when my spirituality came into play. Because I remember after that, you know, my first loss, which really wasn't a loss, but, you know, they, the judges, you know, didn't give it to me. I remember going home and crying and praying and saying I didn't deserve to lose, but I lost anyway. Mm. And I think that, you know, crying, praying, and, you know, just letting, you know, the powers above, that for me is God, you know, just do his magic and just do whatever he does best, and, you know, and open my heart and my mind to just see things more clear. And I, you know, I remember talking to my coach and saying, I didn't lose. And he's like, that's right, you didn't lose. So right. What are we going to do? We're going to go back to the gym and we're going to work even harder. And the next time you fight, you're not going to leave it in the judge's hands. Right. You're going to win every right. round, and you're going to knock this chick out, and you're not going to leave it in the judge's hands. That's what you're going to do. So, so, you know, that's what I did. So, yeah, I mean, and, you know, you're never, whether it's in the ring, out of the ring, you know, it's not only in sports, you know, it could be in your job, in your life, whatever, you're never out of the fight, you know, right. You just gotta keep getting up and keep moving forward. So, so I'm grateful, you know, even the loss has taught me a lot, even though that wasn't the first unfair fight that I lost. You know, I lost like three fights in my professional career, and they were all like bogus. It was definitely because I wasn't represented properly, and each one of those hurt, like it really stung, and they were really they were life-changing in their own way. Mm-hmm. And I think one of my last fights where I went to the girl's hometown. It was in Texas, Laredo, Texas. Mm-hmm. On the border of, of Mexico. You throw a rock and you can see the border of Mexico with that, really. Wow. And we fought in their version of Madison Square Garden. And we were the main event as well. It was like a big deal. It was for a world title. And in boxing, you can literally get away with murder because the first time is always a warning. But in boxing, if at the end of the before the end of the fourth round, if there's an accidental headbutt, it's a ruled a no contest. So I was winning the first four rounds and in her hometown, and right before the end of the fourth round, and I'm tall for my division. This particular girl was like in the face off. She was like, I remember having to look down at her. She jumped up and headbutted me and gave me a 6-inch gash right above my left eye. You can actually see my bone. And the doctor stepped in, stopped the fight. It was ruled a no contest. It was blatant. Everybody gasped, and people came just like this other fight that you saw on TV. And everybody was like, "She did that on purpose." I was like, "Yeah, no."
I'm sure her corner was like telling her, "You're not gonna win. You're losing." Yeah.
It was literally seconds before the end of the fourth round. She jumped up and headbutted me.
So she was desperate.
that fight was there. So if you get hit or have such a vicious cut the way I did, you have to take mandatory time off from boxing, because if you get hit in that same spot again, it will open up again. So that was when I took the time off from boxing, and I was introduced to the world of mountaineering.
Amazing.
At the time I was working for a very I was working for a very notable, wealthy family who I was doing a lot of translation work and stuff, and required me to travel. And I remember that, on my birthday weekend, my boss at the time was like, "I need you to fly to Utah and do some work for me." And I'm like, "On my birthday weekend?" And she was like, "Listen, I'll make it worth your while. I just really need you to come to Utah with me." And I was like, "Okay." So I went, and I did all this work, and on the next day, someone knocks on my door, and it's this guy, and he's like, "Happy birthday! I'm going to take you in your birthday gift." And I was totally confused, but it was my first mountain climb in Utah. Wow. And I remember when we were climbing, was my first time using crampons, ice axe, and everything, and we were halfway through, and he said to me, "First time climbers, this is where they usually turn around." And I'm like, "Yeah, but this is only halfway. Where's the summit?" He's like, "Well, you see those ridges? There's two more behind that."
Yikes.
And I was like, "I want to keep going." And he's like, "Are you sure? There's no shame in turning around." And I'm like, I'm definitely feeling the altitude, but I want to keep going. And we summited. We summited this Toledo Peak. And he said that it, you know, none of his first time climbers had ever done that. And I remember, you know, just feeling something that I had never felt before, through the challenge, the discomfort, the pain. I felt cleansed. That's the word. I felt cleansed. Like I felt like I had let it all out. And when I reached the peak, I felt like this, you know, real closeness to my higher power. And it was addicting. And I could not stop thinking about, you know, climbing again. So a few months after that, I booked my first expedition in Ecuador. And, you know, I was able to summit those mountains over there. And I remember asking the guide, I was like, okay, I don't want this journey with the mountains to end. How do I just not do that? And he's like, well, it's tough for you because you live at sea level. You live in New York City. But when you go home, research the seven summits. That might be something that will keep you very busy with the mountains. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, I came back home, I researched it and saw that the seven summits are the highest peaks in each continent. And I, you know, although it might seem impossible or extremely challenging, it definitely was something that I felt was my calling. So, you know, so I decided to go for it. And so far, you know, I have summited four of the seven so far. And yeah, so you know, I think that, you know, being here from Queens, sorry about that.
They're coming for George.
Trust, yeah, trust me. We're from the Bronx.
So I think that, you know, God willing, that I'm able to complete this goal. It would be great for the community, my community, Queens, because I would become the first Queens resident and Latina to do that. So it'll be something good for the community. I think it would be great for New York City, period. So, so that's been my focus lately.
That's amazing. How do you,
Is. Look at that. That's amazing. I'm wondering, you know, one of the things, or the probably the one thing that stops a lot of people from doing stuff like this is the fear.
Yeah.
How do you conquer that fear? And you're prepping before you're doing it. How do you get past that?
So, you know, fear, even like definitely even more so, well, with all of these things. But I remember in boxing, I remember my first ever Golden Gloves fight. I fought in the preliminaries was in Holy Cross High School here in Queens.
Oh, wow.
And I was 16. I was super, yeah. And it was my first, you know, first boxing fight ever. And I remember my coach's brother, you know, it was, and women's boxing was new. And I remember it was six of us. But on that night, only two of us was going to fight. And, you know, they make us go into this room and, you know, and pick out numbers from this bag. And only number one and two were going to fight each other. Everybody else got a bye that night. Mm. So, of course, I drew number one. And the girl that drew number two was a girl that was much older than me. She was like in her late 30s, and she had like this big scar down her cheek. And I kid you not, her last name was Barboza. and she had just come out of prison. And she was, yes, I swear. And she was very masculine. Like, we all thought it was, she was a guy. Like, when, and when she saw that she drew me, she was like, yes, quick knockout tonight.
Oh, no.
I was just like, you know, and then we come back out and I go to my coach and I'm like, I'm fighting that guy over there. And like, I even saw my coach be like, oh shit. And he was like, no, 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 good, good, good. We got this, we got this.
Yeah.
But I was, I mean, fear and scared was not even, I mean, I was a kid. And yeah. I remember, like, you know, going to the bathroom and, you know, I start putting on my trunks and everything and I'm like shaking and I was scared. I was afraid. And I remember my coach's brother, he saw me and he looked at me and he's like, are you afraid? And I was like, you know, I didn't want to like answer him, but my eyes teared up. And he's like, listen, kid, if you weren't afraid, you wouldn't be human.
Right.
He's like, right. Here, but just don't let it paralyze you.
Right.
He's like, feel that fear and get it along with your love, your passion, everything, and just get it. And when that bell rings, you let it unleash on that girl.
Wow.
And that right there changed my life forever. So it is like a switch. It just takes practice. But the more you do it, the better you become at it. But yeah, I remember, yes. And I remember that when that bell rang on that fight, I swear, I mean, and there's videos of this, but I just remember that I remember what my coach's brother, John, his name is John as well, said to me. And when that bell rang, that switch just went off. And I don't know what happened, but I just went off on that girl. Do you know that I knocked her out in the first round?
What? Wow.
Amazing. Amazing.
Somewhere I have a picture, but if you see the picture, I have a picture of my first fight ever that after that fight. And I didn't even know. I mean, it was my first fight ever and everything. And I'm like at the end posing with my coach like this, crying. I didn't even know how to pose like a real boxer or anything. I was just a kid.
Like,
and yeah, but I exactly. I
okay. It's all good, you know.
So
that's
but
amazing.
You know, fear is something we all feel, you know, and the secret is not to let it paralyze you and feel it and just keep moving forward. You know, there's times on the mountains that you see like this big opening in the earth and, you know, you have to, and they're called crevasses, you know, you have to cross them and you have to cross them without, you know, without that, you know, I can't say without that fear, but just with faith and just keep moving forward. Because if you lag too long, you will fall into them.
Right. Right.
And you know, it's just that thing, you know, it's applying them to real life too. You know, when all this COVID happened, how many people were afraid to leave their home?
Yep.
When COVID first started, there wasn't a vaccine yet. And I was there, like I had to buy groceries for my mother. And I had to go to work, take the train and everything. And you know, when it, during all that, I was right there in the center of it all. And I didn't get COVID. I didn't get infected. And, you know, I just knew that I was going to be okay. So,
faith, you know, you have such strong faith and conviction, and you have such strong mental strength, you know, it's like all part of it. You know, the fear is like, it's a normal part of all of us, really. You know, it's like that's what makes us actually grow as people, is to confront the fear and then to keep going. That's how you grow, you know, as a person. I mean, the fear, the climbing, I mean, I have fear climbing into my bed. So,
and that's pretty high for him.
Yeah, that's pretty a big bed. But, you know, I'm able to kind of like just confront it, keep moving forward, have my wife give me a little boost, and and I sleep nice and tidy. But I wanted to, because we're at 50 minutes. I can't believe it.
Wow.
I wanted to actually talk a little bit about when you, the Golden Glove, you were on the ticket with Camacho, right? With Hector Camacho.
Yes. I mean,
is that a story? Is there a story there?
Yeah. I mean, I fought on a card in Kissimmee, Florida.
Right.
Yes. He was the main event, and it was a co-main event.
Wow.
And we were in the same dressing room, and it was definitely, to me, you know, as a female boxer, and I you know, it was my second professional fight. But because women's boxing is still some sort of novelty, you know, at least my fights were always either the main or the co-main event. So to me, it was like surreal to be in the same dressing room as Macho Camacho. And I remember, like, he was one of the ones, the fighters that I saw when I was small on TV with my, with my father. And I was just like, I used to watch him when I was a little kid. I saw him fight on TV, Chavez.
Chavez, yeah.
Yes. So I was like, oh my gosh. And we're on the same card, and, you know, he fights after me. So to me, it was surreal, but he definitely is a character. Definitely a character. And he was walking around in the dressing room with a hole in his underwear. So
that sounds like
yeah, that's pretty much sounds like him.
Yeah, I mean, he's such a great fighter, and I know we lost him way too soon, and he had a lot of issues and stuff. But just as far as an entertainer, that must have been a thrill to be able to see him and to see that, you know, to experience that.
Yes. I think that it was. I think it was a little bit of just. Yes, because I used to watch him on TV as a kid, and to be even on the same card was definitely. I felt privileged. I definitely felt privileged.
That's awesome. Excuse this cough. I apologize, everyone. So as we're closing up here, one of the things that George and I always do is we ask our guest to kind of give the audience a little bit of a call to action, something that they can do. You know, we're coming out of this horrendous 2.5 years now. There's still a lot of people that are still in that fear to actually make the move and to keep moving forward. Do you have any words of encouragement for them?
Yes, and throughout this pandemic, one of the things that really changed my outlook and my perspective on life was giving back. Especially in today's world, I think although goals and incentives are incredibly important because it helps you have purpose and keep moving forward, but I also feel like that, you know, volunteering your time, helping, giving back is also really rewarding. Right. And just making a difference in someone else's life, you know, is something that changed my life. And I started that right at the start of the pandemic. I was like, okay, I've always wanted to do this. And I started volunteering at least once a week, sometimes more, at food pantries, delivering food to those in need. And it's become a passion of mine. If I can do it more, I would do it more. But I just felt like, you know, it's karma. You know, all the love, all the good that you put out into this world, somehow, some way, that comes back to you. Yeah. So that if there was anything that I would, you know, a tip or an advice to anybody, you know, when I'm feeling a little bit, you know, lost or just like I need that something. Volunteering my time, it just does wonders for the soul.
That's great. I love that. Yes. Well, your life, and you have a long way to go, but so far it's like an amazing film. And I hope that you're documenting it to put out a memoir or a book at some point, because it is an incredible story. Because not only did you achieve all these amazing things that you're achieving, but you also had to persevere early on with, you know, you were dealt a rough card early on, and you still managed to get through that. And here you are, like, doing this amazing work. So you said earlier about dreamers, how you're a dreamer. You know, dreamers really are the ones that create the future, you know. So you're creating a great future for all of us, and especially for Latinos, and, you know, really, really making us proud. And you're doing an amazing job. So I just want to congratulate you. And thank you so much for being on the show.
No, thank you guys for having me. And yes, that's definitely a goal, and that I hope is going to come true soon. I've been working on it, I think, all my life. But a memoir is coming out soon, called Courage, the Book. And, wow. That's awesome. And it documents everything. But I'm a little bit of a perfectionist, and there's definitely things that I've been editing and correcting. But hopefully soon.
Well, we're definitely looking forward to that. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Patricia El Sabel. I'll call you Patty Boom Boom if that's okay. That's good. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, guys.
It's a pleasure.
Wow. I mean,
there it is.
You meet so many people that complain about things.
Yeah, no.
And it almost makes you, like, when you meet somebody like Patty, it almost makes you like, how can you complain? I mean, look at what she's been able to achieve under such tough, you know, circumstances, and not only achieve them, but achieve them well to championship level.
Correct.
I mean? And that's
correct. And the great thing about that is that she, it's almost like her upbringing, because it was a rough upbringing, she actually used that in a positive way.
Correct.
And you know, because she could have gone different ways with that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But you use it in a positive way, and look what happens. You know, I mean, look what kind of life you can lead. The inspiration, yeah. Exactly.
And the inspiration that she's creating for other young girls and young boys out there that are going through stuff, that you can still keep going and you can do something special.
Definitely.
You just gotta believe in yourself. And absolutely. Wow, awesome. All right, thank you very much, everyone, for tuning in. We appreciate you very much. We will see you again next week right here, counterpartsshow.com, and all over YouTube and all over the other places. 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Thank you, George Batista. Thank you, everybody, for watching. See you next week. And as always, peace.